Retirement is something that people in our congregation, some are already enjoying. Other people are looking forward to it. Some people plan for it. Some people don't plan so well. I remember, I don't know if it's even that big anymore, but years ago it was Freedom 55. So maybe if you're really old, you remember that. But so it was kind of all about, well, you're going to be able to retire when you're 55, and then you'll just be able to take the rest of your life, and everything will be easy, and you'll just be able to enjoy all the days that you have left. I don't know about the Freedom 55. I think I'm on the Freedom 95 plan. But retirement is a good thing, but sometimes the bigger question is, well, what happens in retirement? I mean, what is retirement really all about? And not only from a physical point of view, maybe we see how that happens sometimes, that even when people sometimes retire when they're younger, they go out and find themselves another part-time job maybe, or they find a completely different career, or maybe they do a lot of traveling, or I know some people are really helping out with the grandkids, but there's a lot of things that can be done during retirement. So I do want to kind of look a little bit at this concept of retire and what that means, and is it really just about taking life easy? Sometimes we think when we get older, that's kind of what we're supposed to do. So even in our life, we look for those opportunities just to maybe to wind down a little bit. Sometimes it's just temporary, so we take vacation, so we can unwind and relax and find some recreation, do things like that. As a matter of fact, just a couple weeks ago, Judy and I went up to Frankenmuth, and that was kind of paid for by the church here. They gave us a gift card before Christmas, and so we were really appreciative of that, just to be able to get away and unwind a little bit and enjoy just kind of getting away. But so life is, full of maybe these ups and downs and times where we have a lot of stress and maybe other times where we have times of ease. But, there's people in the Bible that maybe are an example for us, that something that could happen to people that get into retirement. And, sometimes there's maybe a different word than retired. It kind of uses the same letters, but it has to do with, well, just how tired are you? How tired do you get? And that's where it's good sometimes when people can retire at a younger age. Then they can do a lot more of the things maybe they really want to do. And hopefully, as a Christian, that would be kingdom things. And so just another reminder, and, I don't always like using illustrations because there's a lot of people around here that do a lot of work, okay? But I know even in this last week, Ron Haosteck was here at the building a lot, just kind of taking care of things and working and, just kind of busy, and because there's a lot of things to be done that maybe hasn't been done in a while. So, it's good that he can invest, his time and energy now that he has a little more time and maybe a little more energy, in doing kingdom things. And so that's a good lesson. And so today we want to take a look at this guy who's called a retired warrior, but he's not really retired. That's the thing. He didn't really give up on everything. He's continuing to go. And it's kind of a continuation from part one last week with Joshua and Caleb when they went into the promised land. They went in just to spy it out, to check out what it was like, what the people were like, what the cities were like, what the food was like, just to see, hey, give us a report. There was 12 spies that were sent out, and there was only two that came back and said, it's going to be tough, but we can do it. God is with us, and God is bigger. And the people said, well, we feel like we are just grasshoppers in our own sight, and we're grasshoppers in their sight. We can't do it. 10 people said, that's impossible. And so people complained and grumbled, and they got all negative. And, we're thankful that people around here are never like that. But, so it's just kind of this complaining and this grudging and this doubtful attitude that these 10 had, but two of them, Joshua and Caleb. And so what happened is, God, a little bit later on there in Numbers, chapter 13, he, to put it mildly, he was not happy with these people. Like, he was ready to say, well, let's just end this right now and we'll start all over again with Moses. Well, that's almost the kindest way I can put it. But God was not very happy. But God forgave them. God forgave them for their sin. But did you know that their sin, even though it had been forgiven, had consequences? Are you familiar with that idea? Sometimes we think, well, I can just sin however I want, and you know, I'm going to get off scot-free. There's going to be, yeah, I'll be forgiven. But sometimes there are, could we call them lifelong consequences? As a matter of fact, God said, there's no one in this group that is over 20 years old. They're not going into the promised land except Joshua and Caleb. They're the only two. But everyone else is going to die in the wilderness. And so they wandered in the wilderness for another 40 years. And so now we get to this guy named Caleb. So we want to look at today. Caleb comes up both in Numbers and in Joshua. Caleb, he's old now. By the way, so he was about 40 years old when this initial spy checking out surveillance mission happened. 40 years old. Sometimes we think, oh, Caleb was just probably, he was probably 13 years old and he was just kind of a, you know, a dreaming youth. Oh, we can do it. That's not a problem. No, he's 40, a 40-year-old warrior that had some experience of life. And yet he trusted God at 40 years old. Now, I just have one question, because I think this relates to all of us. But do we sometimes do the right thing, and we want the right thing, and we're pressing forward to the right thing? We say, God, I trust you. God, I am counting on you. God, I am seeking you. I want this blessing that you have promised. We're moving forward. And yet, because of the sins of other people, how long would you be willing to wait? How long would you be able to keep up your faith? How long would you be strong in enthusiasm? I mean, for some of us, it only takes days. Oh, I'm so discouraged. We're wandering through the wilderness for 40 years with people that are whining and they're complaining and they're still faithless. And, you know, it's just a hard day after day with these people. And not only that, I would like to be in Canaan now. Why do I have to suffer because of their sin, because of their disobedience, because of their lack of faith? Let me ask you, how would you be at this point 85 years old? You're saying, well, I can go in there, but man, I'm ready to retire. I'm ready just to say, hey, I want it easy now. After all of this that I've been through, not only physically or emotionally and spiritually, after all I've been through, I just need a life of ease. I need to take the quiet road. I need the front porch rocking chair. But not Caleb. Yeah, Caleb, he wasn't yet tired. He wasn't yet ready to give up. He wasn't at the point where he is even having his own pity party. You ever had one of those? A pity party for one. Because that's all that's coming. It's just going to be you. But, you know, you just kind of sit there and you think and you contemplate, and it's easy to get negative and discouraged, frustrated, and maybe even give up a little bit on people. Do we ever sometimes give up a little bit on God? Because we're so discouraged. But not Caleb. He was a different kind of person. We would say he had a different spirit. He was a man of great faith. Kind of seems to be from the beginning to the end. So just kind of a recap. These are some things we did not look at last week regarding Caleb. But he said, we should go up and take possession of the land because we can certainly. He's saying, I know for sure, without a doubt, God is with us. Victory is waiting. All we have to do is step out in faith. All we need to do is go forward, take the path that God has planned, claim the promises God has made. We can move forward and we can have victory. We can certainly, without a doubt, we will overcome. And Joshua and Caleb said, if the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and he will give it to us. It will be ours. And so again, with complete confidence, so we call that faith. Faith strong enough not just to sit around and talk about it, but let's do it. Yeah, we're putting our life on the line. We are sticking our necks out. We are willing to move forward even though it's a little uncertain how it's going to happen, but I know it's going to happen. I'm not sure how God is going to accomplish this, but I know he's going to fulfill it. I know he's going to come through for us. We trust him. And this was the attitude of Caleb at 40 years old. So back to Joshua chapter 14. And so this is after, Moses has died and all those people have died in the wilderness. And now they're moving in. This is even after, the walls of Jericho when they marched around and God gave them that great victory. And so now they're moving in town after town, city after city. The people of God are moving into the promised land, in the land of Canaan. And so now Caleb comes to Moses and says, like, let's have a discussion. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought him word again as it was in my heart. That's Caleb saying to Joshua that, you remember the report? And Caleb gave this same report that Joshua did. They were together on this. But he's saying, the report I gave didn't really come from what I saw. The report did not really come based on what I thought or how I felt. It came from my heart. In my heart, I knew that God was going to deliver us. So he's saying, again, it's an act of faith. It's a statement of faith. It was in my heart. We are told that we are to love the Lord with all of our heart. It's kind of interesting that comes first. I'm not sure why. Because we know that it goes on to say heart, soul, mind, strength. There's four of those different parts that we love God with. But heart is one. It's the first one mentioned. But he's saying, I knew in my heart. And that was the report I gave. While the other people gave out of fear, he gave a report out of his faith. So Joshua 14 and verse 8. I, however, followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly. So this comes up several times. It's not just, I was kind of committed. I had some fear. I had some doubt. I had some concern. I had some reservation. No, he's saying I was wholehearted. So again, we're talking about the heart, his commitment of serving and following and leaning on the Lord. So that day, Moses swore to me. So again, Caleb's here just to remind Joshua, you remember, Moses promised me this. And he's saying, I'm here today. Now today, what is he again? 85 years old. He's saying, I've just come to claim my promise. Moses said it was mine. I'm here to take it. So on that day, Moses swore to me, the land on which your feet have walked will be your inheritance and that of your children forever because you have followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly. So again, the idea of being completely committed. But what did that mean? That means because he served the Lord, God was going to bless him. But it wasn't just him. Do you see who else God was blessing? God was going to bless the people that came after, his family. And a lot of times, no matter where you are, if you are at work or you're some kind of conference or even if you're at church, I know one of the things that really mean a lot to us is our family. And Moses said to Joshua, this is going to be an inheritance for your family. Now think about that. Here you are, maybe as a young adult or a middle-aged adult or a senior adult, but thinking about what kind of legacy? Now, I'm not talking about how much money you got or how much land you have or necessarily even your reputation in the community that you're really popular. But what about spiritually? What kind of heritage are you going to leave for your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren? How much do we think about that? How much can we pour into the inheritance we are going to leave? That's going to require us to have what? Great faith now. Faith that people can see. Faith that is demonstrated. Faith that's willing to go through difficult situations and go through the storms. And what is it? It's a faith that's got to be patient. Because we realize it's not all going to work out necessarily this week or this month or this year or even this decade. It may take years before we see fruition and growth and maturity, and we actually see what God is going to be giving. But how important is that for us to say, I want to leave a legacy of spiritual faith to my children, and to my grandchildren, to my great, and even after I'm dead, that maybe this legacy will continue on generation after generation. It doesn't always happen. It doesn't always work. Now, we've known some good people in the Old Testament that their faith was not passed on to their children, or at least not to all of their children. No fault of their own. Even your children have free will. They can choose. But do we really think about what am I really doing? What choices am I making? What paths am I clearing out so that I can pass something on of significance to the next generation? Well, what's going to require is for us to follow the Lord, my God, wholeheartedly, being committed. And this is the man, Caleb. So you can ask the question, well, just how committed was he? Like, what does this mean? Okay, we got the picture at 40, but now he's 85. What is he asking of Joshua? He's saying, well, you remember the land? I want that land. Well, what land was that? Now then, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive 45 years. So he's saying, even for me to still be alive, God is the one doing that. It's not because I ate healthy. I don't know how you feel about manna and quail. I guess it's healthy. It's not because he worked out every day. He didn't take his vitamins, right? I don't think he had filtered water. I don't know. I'm just saying, it was the Lord who kept him alive. The Lord preserved his life, but not only his life, but his health. Because he goes on to say, since the time he said this to Moses while Israel moved about in the wilderness, so here I am before he said, I'm 85 years old. So again, get the picture in your mind, somebody you know that's 85 years old. Now, don't think about the person in the worst of health. Think about the person even in the best of health that's 85 years old. And there's a few people here that have been blessed with there's people here that are 85 years old that are healthier than I am. Now you can say, well, that's not much. But you know, still, that it's amazing. It's a blessing to still have a good health at 85 years old. So this is what he goes on to say to Joshua. I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. Yeah, you remember 45 years early. I'm still strong today as I was back then. Now, maybe physically not quite as strong, but you know, spiritually, say I'm just as strong. I've not given up. I've not been doubting God. I've not been getting bitter with God. I've not been saying I'm ready to give up on God. He's saying I'm just as strong now as I was back then. Even after, like I say, imagine being in the wilderness and wandering for 40 to 45 years. But he's saying, I'm just as strong today as I was back then. And I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle. I'm just as ready. Now people can say, but man, you need to retire. You need to hang it up. You need to give it on to somebody. I mean, there's younger people around. You don't have to do this. Now he could have said, well, you know, I'm kind of older now and you know, I've been through a lot. You know, I've got some kids and some grandkids and, you know, maybe I've just got some relatives and I got some other people in my extended family. They can go out and fight this battle. He said, no, I want to go. I'm ready to go at 85 years old. Really? Well, how do you see this playing out? Like, where do you think you're going to go and fight? Now, it's kind of obvious if you're 85 years old and you're ready to go out and fight, you kind of say, well, you know, where are the cities where, you know, maybe most of the battles have already been won? Where the people that are living in the cities are kind of beaten down, they're a little bit weaker, they're already afraid of us. It's going to be like a sure victory. No, that's not what he said. He says, I want the land that Moses promised. And this is the land. This is important now. Now give me the hill country the Lord promised me on that day. So hill country, you already get the idea. It's not on a mountain, but it's a fortified city on an upper plain, which always means back in that day, the people living in the city have the advantage because they can fight down at you. You have to climb up the hill. You got to scale the walls. It's going to be a lot of work. This is not going to be an easy fight. But I want the hill country. I want to go up and fight these people. You yourself heard then that it's the Anakites. Now, who are they? Well, again, from last week, they are the giants in the land. These are like Goliath and his brothers. and some extended relatives. He's not going after the little guys. He is going after the biggest guys, the strongest guys, the greatest warriors in Canaan. And he's 85 years old. He's saying, that's what I want. I am not settling for anything less. I want that city. It was promised to me, and I'm going in at 85. Now, I realize there's some people here maybe younger than 85. You know, we're not saying you've got to go out and conquer the world. We're just saying, if God is working in my life, what can I do? Now, for some people, maybe, you know, a very quiet victory. You know, something we can do. You know, you don't have to necessarily be out up front. You don't need to be boisterous. You don't need to, you know, be out, you know, debating everybody on every, you know. But find out what God wants you to do. Find out what God's gifted you to do. Because not everybody's been gifted like Caleb, but you got to love his attitude. Whether you have the same ability or the gifts or the stature or even the same amount of energy he had, you got to love his attitude. And so, but what can we do as we move forward? Like, does retirement literally mean I'm just going to sit around and do nothing, even spiritually? I'm going to let everybody else take over because I've done my part. I'm going to let the kids take over. I'm going to let the young families take. I'm done with serving spiritually. Or do we look at it and say, now I've got opportunity to move forward. Maybe I've got more time that I can do something, maybe even different. Don't have as much energy, perhaps. Maybe don't even have as much money as I used to have when I was working full time. But there's things that I can do, even at 85 years old. So the Anakites were there. And their cities were large. Well, you know, I know something, they're still large. They may even have gotten larger if you're familiar with population growth after 40 years. And their walls were fortified. Yes, they're still there. But the Lord helping me, I will drive them out just as he said. So again, what's he have? He has faith. He's not relying on his own power. That's one of the big challenges of leadership. Whether you're trying to lead your home, or you're trying to lead a small group, or a business, or even lead the church. Because sometimes, again, from a humanistic point of view, now, again, probably people in the leadership journals of the world won't say this because they don't believe in having faith. To them, it would be taking a big risk. But when you have faith, you're able to say, here's what I can do. Here's what I can do. And if you settle with what you can do, well, we've added it all up and we've got this as many people. And with this many people, we should be able to do this much work. And with this much money coming in, and we've counted it all up, and we do a budget, and we say, when all that's done, this is what we can do with the amount of money that we have. And we've got this type of demographic within the congregation of old people and young people and men and women and people that, you know, maybe different people groups. So we've got all that. And so based on the information we have, this is the decision we're going to make. That's not what Caleb does. Caleb kind of go like this. We've looked at the people. We've looked at our abilities. We've looked at the demographics. And we've looked at the money. And we've decided that from a human point of view, we can do 100 units of whatever work we're trying to do. That's human, isn't it? But Caleb would say, don't do 100. That's ridiculous. Like, that's humanistic. Any group of people can, you know, if you've got enough resources to do 100, what is that? Worldly. What would Caleb say? Shoot for 300. He said, we don't have it. We don't have that many people. We don't have that much energy. We don't have that many resources. We don't have that much money. 300. I don't know if I have that much faith. That's going to be a large stretch. Caleb says, well, I've thought about it. I've listened to what you said. Here's the conclusion. 400. Why? Because we're saying it's not about us. It's about us saying, God, you can use me, but God, it's going to have to be done in your power and in your strength. And so I have faith that you are going to work. You're going to do, because if it's all about me, at the end of the day, what are we going to say? It's all about us. We figured out what we could do and we did it. And we put the effort in. We made the sacrifice. We served. We worked. We sweat. We gave our money and we gave our time and we gave our talents and we did it. Well, we should have a worship service and just praise ourselves. Right? Because we did it. But when we take a step to say, if God is not in this, it is going to fail. If the Lord had not been with us, we would have perished. Right? Because that's a step of faith. It's not a step of sight. So we live by faith and not by sight. So we trust in the Lord. And this is, you know, what Caleb is doing at his old age, saying the Lord is going to drive them out. He said he would. I trust that. Now, Caleb had to make the decision. He can't just say, well, I'll wait. I'm going to sit here until the Lord drives them out. When it's all cleared out, then I'll move in. He said, nope, I'm willing to work. I'm going to step forward in faith. This is going to happen, and we are going to have the victory. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7, for God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. And ultimately, what that is saying is, God is giving me something I don't have in myself. It's not something I've created. It's not a course I went to. It's not wishful thinking. He's saying, I believe God has given me something through faith. He's given me a spirit of power. It's not my power. I don't need him to give me a spirit of power if I'm only going to be using my own power. This is saying it's God's power. It's something in addition to what I already have. It's something that's going to be multiplying what I already plan to do. And it's a spirit of love. Now, it's the kind of love that, hey, I didn't used to have. And for people that are older Christians, you know, they can say, this love is increasing. I have greater love now than I even did a year ago. And if that's not true, there's something wrong. Because none of us have reached perfection in our love. And self-control, the same thing. We are growing in self-control, but we see it multiplying because God is working. And so if we are lacking in power and love and self-control, it's ultimately because we are not trusting in God. We're not saying, God, you transform me, you change me, you equip me. I'm going to do what I can do, but it's not relying on my own strength, my own power, my own ability. It's trusting in God. So hopefully I can be a stronger person, a more loving person, and a more self-controlled person than what I used to be. So this is what Paul is telling Timothy, that he's got to be a different person. From Hebron, Caleb drove out the three Amalekites, Sheshai, Anaman, and Talamai, the sons of Anak. So, now, he probably wasn't single-handed, but he was right up front in the middle of the battle, driving out the giants. He's the one who said, I'm going to overcome. And as far as we know, Caleb was not a giant himself. He was not necessarily even that skilled in fighting. The Israelites did fight a few battles while they were wandering in the wilderness, but they were not trained and equipped soldiers like those people in the land of Canaan. But he is a man who went in and said, I am willing to cut down the giants, to kill the giants, to eliminate the giants in my life, because I am going to be accepting and receiving and living in the promise of God. And so this is what God wants us to do. So Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 29. So this is the tie I have on today too. See, I came well equipped. By the way, Isaiah chapter 40, first of all, before this, he talks about how great and how powerful God is. Now, one thing, just to kind of tie this in a little bit, when we talk about how great and how powerful God is, Isaiah chapter 40 says, when God looks over the whole earth, he sees all people or all men. And you know what it says about God? When he looks down on them, he sees them as grasshoppers. Which is kind of, that was our problem last week. The people said, these giants in the land were like grasshoppers. You see, but Caleb and Joshua were saying, oh, I looked up at God, and God's looking down and go, no, those, is that the biggest giant you got? You kidding me? And you're afraid of them? Man, that guy's just like a little grasshopper. God can take care of this. And this is the type of person Caleb was, but had this kind of attitude, that God is the one who gives strength to the weary. And God is the one who increases power of the weak. But, because even the young people, we'd say even the teenagers or the young adults grow tired and weary. And young men, they stumble and fall. And you think about this, maybe it's not only talking physically. Maybe it's talking emotionally, psychologically, socially, morally, spiritually. Even they fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like the eagles. They will run and not grow weary. And they will walk and not be faint. So Romans 8 and verse 37. In all these things, we are more than conquerors. That's interesting. Have you ever thought about what that meant? I mean, one thing if he said, in all these things, no matter what life challenges face us. This is what he's talking. No matter what you're going, no matter what the trials, no matter what the temptations, no matter what the struggles are, we all have them. We're not downplaying the issues of life. Just like we don't downplay the giants who live in the land. We're just saying God's bigger, God's stronger, God has promised victory. And so Romans 8, in all these things, we are conquerors. We are victors. We are overcomers. In all these things, we are conquerors. But you know that's not what it says. What does it mean? You can be more than a... Like, how can you be... I'm a victor. You can be more than a victor. Really? Even more? It's like so sure. Like whatever you are hoping that would be the goal or to be the prize or to be the reward... It's going to be even better than that. More than conquerors through Him, through God, more than conquerors. And do you know why that is? Now, to me, if I was writing the Bible, you know it would have to go like this. In all these things, we are more than conquerors through God who has the power. Through God who has the control. Through God who is overall. But it doesn't focus on all those attributes of God. It's true, they are. But it's because God loves us. Like some people think, well, God, like He's just super controlling. He just wants His own way in everything. God, He sometimes gets a little bit angry, gets a little bit resentful. Some of those things may be true, but it's God who loves us. And that's always the invitation. That's always the message. It's always the idea that God is the one who loves us. And He loves us that much that He wants a relationship with us. And He loves us that much. He's saying, I want you to have victory. I'm going to supply victory. I'm going to give victory. I'm going to promise victory. If you want victory, you can have it. So God said, I'm going to make the way. I'm going to send my Son. He's going to die on the cross. He's going to be raised from the dead. And if you follow Him and you serve Him and you love Him, and Jesus is the Lord of your life, you can have victory in your life. It doesn't mean you're not going to struggle. It doesn't mean you're never going to fail, because we all do. But God will keep us strong. He will keep us on the road. He will continue to bless us. He will continue to reveal His promises through the Word to us as we grow. If we can encourage you today, if today you want to become a Christian and be baptized into Christ so you can have the victory, that can be yours today. Let's stand, we'll sing this song, and let us know how we can be a blessing.